Reality Sandwich presents Esoteric Voices.
My name is Matthew Gilbert, and I'm the Director of Communications and Editor-in-Chief at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which was founded in 1973 by Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon. When he was coming back from the moon, he had what he called an epiphany experience, which he described ultimately as being a samadhi experience, which is what spiritual traditions in the East call when you have a moment of an experience of unity where everything seems connected. And Edgar, being a scientist and a, you know, solid left brain kind of guy, was blown away by this. And so what he ended up doing was trying to marry this left brain linear thinking part of him with this sort of right brain explosive creative unity consciousness experience and try to understand it. So his mission when he came back, his new mission when he came back to Earth, was to apply the rigors of traditional science to understanding what this experience was. And a short time after that, he founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences in 1973.
And so can you explain what is noetic? What does that mean?
Noetic is from the Greek word noetikos, or nous, and it means inner knowing. So a noetic experience is something that happens internally, that you just get, something that just happens. Let's say you have an aha moment, or let's say you have your own experience of unity, or you hear a voice from somewhere, or you think of your mother and then 30 seconds later she calls and you haven't heard from her in 5 years. Those kinds of things where the only person who can validate it is you. It's valid to you, but if you told somebody else, they might go, oh, that sounds kind of crazy. But it's your experience. It happened inside you. It's what's also called an anomalous experience. It's not a normal thing. It tends to sort of just be these surprise moments. That's a sense of inner knowing. That's what we refer to when we say noetic.
And so science is sort of concerned with things that you can actually see and observe. And noetic sciences is sort of like the inner experiences. So maybe you could talk about where do those two intersect in terms of what the type of work that IONS does in exploring these scientifically.
Well, historically, the Institute became well known for exploratory research into mind-body phenomenon as it relates to healing, for example. So, you know, years ago, the idea that the mind influenced the body and our health was considered pretty far out. So a lot of the work that the Institute did was to show that this was not the case. And it wasn't just our work. We also work with a lot of collaborators out there who are pretty well known currently, like we provided seed grants, for example, or maybe we teamed up with them on a study. So there are a number of people out there who are doing this kind of work, but whose original research was done decades ago with the help of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. So the whole idea of consciousness and healing is one that we broke some new ground in. Also, of course, we did a lot of work on psi phenomenon, parapsychology, the whole idea of ESP and things like remote viewing and so on. These things are not supposed to happen. You're not supposed to be able to read minds, get information from any place outside of yourself. This was just not accepted in the existing paradigm of science. What's real can be touched, felt, measured, and so on. And so through a series of experiments with, again, our own researchers and others, we found and started to build a database that showed statistically that, yes, in fact, this phenomenon can be measured and it has statistical validity. So we sort of put the whole idea of psi research on the map and legitimized it, even though still the majority, the mainstream, doesn't quite know what to do with it. They're afraid of it. They deny it. It's really not part of their belief system.
So maybe you could talk a little bit more about the elusive nature of consciousness in terms of like the mechanism of what it is and how it works and why mainstream science may have such a difficult time accepting it or integrating it into their existing paradigm.
Well, I'm probably not the best person to ask the question because I'm not a scientist, but essentially mainstream science says thoughts start and end with the physical brain. That's it. Consciousness, mind, it's all essentially a biochemical process. What we're saying is that's not the case, and we're not the only ones who are saying it. There are different perspectives on the nature of consciousness. I think part of the excitement of all this is that we don't really know for sure what consciousness is. We don't believe it is restricted just to the physical brain, which opens up a lot of possibilities. If you look at spiritual traditions of all kinds, they'll say that everything is consciousness, everything is spirituality. We live and breathe in this sort of milieu of consciousness, of potential, just like a fish swimming in water. You can think of water as consciousness and the fish as your physical body. And so one school of thought is our brain acts as an antenna to capture data in this field of consciousness, this field of richness of all kinds of potential. And then that data is filtered through our own unique individuality. I mean, that's one idea. If you look at quantum physics, for example, there's a place where hard data, hard science is being conducted that is proving that electrons, when separated, are communicating with each other simultaneously. If you separate an electron from its partner, again, I'm kind of ignorant here, but if you, let's say, tweak one electron and it's hundreds of miles away, that same original bonded electron 100 miles away will tweak at the same time. It's not supposed to happen. How can that happen? Well, there must be something in between them that is providing that medium of connection. What is it? That's what we look at. We think that there are some very interesting answers in that question.
And so what are some of the very practical applications of some of the research that has come out in terms of like things that you can apply to your own life?
Well, I think one of the more obvious ones is the whole notion of this pro-social emotions. So if you look at feelings of altruism, feelings of compassion, those things actually have a positive effect on the immune system. And so imagine that if people realize that by being generous and by acting from their heart, by connecting with people genuinely, that it wasn't just a nice thing to do, that it was actually good for your body. So that's a pretty radical notion. The whole idea that we are literally connected, that consciousness connects everyone, makes it a little bit harder to live in an us-them world. In other words, we are all literally connected. The interdependence that they talk about is not just ecosystem interdependence, but it's also psychological, it's emotional, it's spiritual dependence and interdependence. So I think when we start to realize that the fundamental assumptions of how the world works, as defined by traditional mainstream science, don't answer enough of the questions, these new ideas begin to provide another map to live, to interact, to make decisions.
Some of the other work that Marilyn Schlitz has done and IONS as well is looking in terms of personal transformation and social transformation. What kind of insights do you have in terms of what things are going on when transformation happens?
Well, our researchers have done a lot of work in that area. Essentially, I think the easiest answer is a transformation is considered a fundamental shift in perspective. So I'll take an obvious example. Somebody who simply does not believe that extraterrestrial beings exist. What if a UFO landed in their backyard? That's an immediate experience of something that will blow their worldview open. And so that is the most obvious example of a transformation. In other words, you had a belief in this moment, something happens, and that fundamental belief changes. So when that fundamental belief changes, it's like it tips a bunch of dominoes in a bunch of different directions. So all of a sudden, you're open to a whole lot of other perspectives that you may not have been open to earlier. So the notion of personal transformation is your assumptions about how the world works somehow are challenged and are broken open. Those assumptions don't work anymore, and a new set begins to take shape. When that happens, your relationship to everything around you will start to change. Now, when you get enough individuals to start experiencing certain kinds of transformations, the collective starts to change as well, because we are ultimately a community. And so, as within, so without. 10 people go into a room thinking one thing, you're going to have a particular energy among those 10 people. 10 other people go in thinking a different thing, there's going to be a different energy there. So that's how you can start to connect the individual with the collective. When you start to change, everything around you starts to change. And if we truly are connected, then what you resonate with is felt by other people. Everybody has the experience of being in a room with someone who may say very little, but has great personal presence. That's an example of, you know, something that can be felt. Why should you be able to feel that? I don't know. Our antenna are pretty finely tuned, and I think we forget that. So that's how that dance between individual and collective happens. And at greater and greater scales, you know, the potential is endless.
And so maybe you could give some more specific examples in terms of the beliefs that you think are coming into awareness that people are seeing that are transforming them in some way, either through their direct experience and their conflicts from what they're experiencing in mainstream medicine, healing experiences, or other type of direct experiences that people are having that are opening themselves up to these types of beliefs.
Well, I think the belief that what we think matters is really important. That if we think that our thoughts have an impact, for example, we recently did a study, the Institute, to take a couple, one of whom had cancer and the other one was trained in techniques of compassionate intention. And so the study that they did was to separate the two, and they would have the partner who was undergoing chemotherapy or whatever treatments they were in, the partner who was ill, in a room on a video screen. And their other partner was someplace else, some distance away, could see their other partner, and at random times, they would project feelings of great warmth and love and compassionate intention towards their partner. The partner never knew that this was happening. It was all done randomly. However, their partner was also wired up. So on the compassionate intention side, the researchers knew when the partner was sending those intentions. They had the recipient of those intentions hooked up, and they could tell physiologically when there were anomalies in that partner's physiology. And sure enough, they found, beyond just random chance, that when the compassionate partner would send those vibrations, let's say, to their other partner, their partner's physiology changed. And so when we start to realize that what we think matters, when what we think has an impact, then I think we start to be careful about what we think. And when we start to feel like we are connected with everyone else, then the whole notion that somebody else's religion is bad or wrong, or that this ethnic group is not okay and another one is, when we start to realize that the divisiveness and the fragmentation are not serving us, I think we're more inclined to want to reach out to say, you know, this whole notion of survival of the fittest, which has been with us since Darwin, might not be the right way to survive. Maybe it's the survival of the most communal. Maybe it's the survival of the most loving. Maybe that is actually fundamental to how our species evolves. That's a basic belief system shift that I think some of the work that we're doing contributes to.
What type of advice would you give for people in terms of things they can do or beliefs or intentions or thoughts they could put forward moving forward? What's the best advice you have in terms of that?
Well, a couple things come to mind. One is the power of meditation and the power of simply being silent and present, to just watch your thoughts and not be so active. Practice being, not doing. The other one is to be able to hold conflicting points of view simultaneously, that we learn how to live in a world of paradox where two seemingly conflicting things can be true simultaneously. Because if you can hold that, if you can move out of a either-or black-white perspective, it opens up a lot of other different possibilities.
What do you mean by that specifically, like in terms of like what would be an example of a paradox view that people might have?
Well, for example, that two different approaches to spirituality are legitimate. Let's say that Christianity has a particular orientation towards spirituality. Islam has one. Buddhism has one. What if we decided that they were all okay, that they were all legitimate, that they were all valid for what they were, that we didn't have to force certain people to believe the way we do, that we didn't have judgments on other people because theirs is different than ours? They can both be true. And so if we can start to learn how to hold these multiple truths And if we can just simply be quiet and to allow sort of a deeper, more internal sense of validating come from within us, then I think we are going to be better prepared for the continuing complexity that the world is going to be bringing to us in the next, I mean, it's happening now, and it will continue to happen. So we need to be adaptable. We need to be flexible. We need to be very grounded in who we are as people, but we also need to hold a much bigger space for all the diversity around us.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Good. You're welcome. Thank you.